Welcome back to the good, the bad, and a WTF What I'm Thinking. It's episode 47. We're nearing that 50 mark. And
Oh yeah.
And it's our second of the year, or is it our third of the year? It's our third.
Our third.
This year is going quick, isn't it? Wow. First month of January, not nearly.
Who could believe it's January?
It's kind of mad. The first month is all pretty much done and dusted. Really? I think we got. Is this the last episode in January?
One more week. No. The 31st would be the last.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Which is on next Monday. Yeah.
I do apologize. I thought this month was a shorter month, but yeah, you're right. 31st. But we're recording this on Friday, so we actually have some sad news to react to today, don't we?
Very sad news. Yes, Meat Loaf has passed away.
Nice.
The legendary singer died, 74 years old. I mean, just one of the most powerful voices. I can't think of a voice that's as powerful and as operatic as his voice is.
Yeah, especially when you match it to the man himself. You wouldn't expect the voice to come out of that man.
No, but he's such an interesting character as well. The man is... He feels like the kind of guy that should be a celebrity, if you know what I mean. He just feels bigger than life.
Yeah.
And that's how you imagine celebrities. They just seem to be on a different platform to you. They just seem to be grandiose.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that he named himself Meatloaf as well is something we should never forget. What is a meatloaf? Have you seen what a meatloaf looks like? It looks weird.
I only know it from The Simpsons, and it's just animated brown stuff in a pan.
Yeah,
is how I remember it.
Yeah, and he basically he went for that name, and you kind of think that was a crazy name to go for, Meatloaf. When you really think
pretty
about
out
it,
there.
But he made it normal. He made it normal. Obviously, he released one of the highest selling albums of all time, "Bat Out of Hell."
Yeah,
which is a very very good album. Interesting stories behind that album as well. He was rejected by a lot of people, weren't he? He was rejected by a lot of people. People thought he was just kind of a Bruce Springsteen parody, didn't they? That was kind of the perception that he got. But it was such a weird album and people just loved it. And to be fair, it holds up today. It's a very consistent album. There's a lot of good tracks on that album.
That's just like a whole story, isn't it? That's the interesting thing about a lot of his songs. They're basically stories. His songs are more like a musical stage show.
Yeah.
That's how I figure it. It's very played out. I mean, most famously, there's the Bat Out of Hell musical that's in London at the moment, probably all across the world, which is obviously massive, and that's all centered around the album and sort of a story around that on live Broadway. So that just goes to show you. But yeah, I looked into that. I mean, that was... I reckon they estimate about 30 million copies sold worldwide.
Wow.
Out of the hell.
That's...
And it spent... And this is incredible. It spent 470 weeks in the UK charts. That's an all-time record.
That's insane. That's an all-time record.
That's what I'm saying here, unless it's been updated, which I doubt, because I don't think... How music is perceived today, I don't think you're ever going to be able to beat them records, because it's so easy to find. Back then, obviously, you had only the radio stations to find music, right?
Mm.
These days, you've got so many platforms to find music, so it's very rare for something to be on the top of the charts for too long. There's always new stuff churning out.
Yeah. There's a lot.
The pool has widened.
100% the pool has widened, yeah. But you forget as well, I think people forget that Meatloaf started off as an actor, didn't he? So he wasn't really taken seriously by some record execs.
He started off in a stage production of Hair.
Mm. Yeah, he did a lot of theatre stuff, didn't he? And he did, obviously... Oh, God, I'm on the album here, sorry. Sorry, the album's just taken over half my screen there. Yeah, he did the Rocky Horror Picture Show as well, didn't he? He was in that, 1975, and then he released this album in 1977. But I think it took a lot to get it off the ground, because he was an actor being a musician, which is that because he was made famous being an actor, wasn't he, really?
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't taken seriously by a lot of record execs. So it is interesting. And then obviously, look what happened to that album. Everyone who got involved with that album was probably not regretting their decision by the end of it. Let's just say that.
Oh, no, definitely. I mean, he's probably lived off that album alone.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. The residuals he got from that would be absolutely insane. It'd just be non-stop, wouldn't it? Do you know, actually, thinking about can I change the subject, or do you want to still talk about Meatloaf?
No, you can. Well, we can go back to Meatloaf if you want to deviate a little bit. We can always go back to him.
Yeah, just while it was on my mind. Residuals. Interesting. And I didn't realize this. I don't know why I never realized this before, but there's a guy on TikTok, right? He was in Superbad. I don't know if you've come across him on TikTok. He played the young Seth on Superbad, the kid that was drawing all the phallic, and he got banned from eating phallic-shaped food and stuff like that. He played the kid in that movie, and he still gets paychecks from that movie like every month for his appearance in the movie, which I guess is like PR. I guess it's like PRS in movie terms. I didn't know that was a thing for movie stars. I thought I knew it was a thing for music, obviously, because the song gets played somewhere, they get money. I didn't realize that actors still get money for movies that they were in years ago. So he showed his check that he got, and it was like $230. I don't know if it was weekly or monthly, but he got that, and he was sort of showing like how he still gets money from Superbad. And I was thinking, wow. And he had a tiny role in that movie, obviously. He was just played the young Seth. He didn't really have a massive role in the movie. I sort of imagine some movie stars and their big roles that they did, the checks they must get for movies that they've done like 15, 20 years ago now, monthly, must be insane.
I think it depends on the contract, right? Because I don't think everybody gets that. And especially, I wouldn't have thought for lower actors, not to be harsh there, but he's not one of the main actors.
No.
I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting thing. We need to find out more about this.
We do.
Try and solve the riddle.
We do, because you hear about people getting paid one-off fees for being in movies, so be like, oh, you got $1 million for this, you got 10 million for this, blah, blah, blah. But you never hear about the ongoing payments that they get for it, do you, at all? So that is interesting.
I know they get like shares, don't they? I think the most notable one I can think of is Scarlett Johansson for Black Widow. Because she kicked off because in her contract, somewhere along the lines, she gets a percentage of whatever it grosses in the cinema. And because it went straight to Disney Plus, it basically cut her out of what she was going to get paid. And that's the first time I ever heard about that. So that must also be a thing about how much profit it comes into it. But I'm guessing that's contract. That must be a contractual agreement. I can't think. It can't just be like an unwritten law. It must be. You must have a good agent, is what I'm thinking. The kid had a good agent.
Do you think? I think maybe. Yeah, maybe it is a contract thing. Maybe a lot of movies have it. They'd be like, oh, you'll make 0.5% of whatever this movie makes in years to come, I guess, or whatever. So obviously a movie like Superbad is shown a lot. A lot of DVDs are still purchased, probably a lot of people buying it on certain streaming services. It's being played in cinemas, like, occasionally. It's on TV, it's on networks, etc., etc., etc. So imagine there must be a little percentage. So
It's always in the E for that movie. So, yeah, it must... Hey, it's nice. It'd be nice if that could happen, but considering how broke some actors get, I find it unlikely that it happens all the time.
Yeah, you would think that. Yeah, but I suppose an actor's broke is not the same as other people's broke, though, is it really? So some actors would be like, "Oh yeah, I'm broke," but it probably just means that they've got less than $1 million in the bank, and their outgoings are a lot. Do you know what I mean? It's probably that. Like, they can't afford to live the life.
Still, they can't break even. Yeah, they can't break even with their luxuries.
With their overheads and stuff like that. Yeah, exactly. That's probably more what it means. But, interesting. I just came across that and I was just like, oh, that's kind of cool. And he showed the check and everything, so it was all legit. It's just, yeah, anyway, I can't remember what his TikTok is, but he was in Superbad. People should have a look at it because he's quite open about his experiences in Hollywood and stuff. Obviously, none of it's bad. It's just little things like that that he shows you, little things that you wouldn't even think about outside of the acting world, I guess.
I think that's an interesting, like, insider's view of what it's like to be an actor.
Yeah, so I was just thinking about that. I don't know if we want to go back to Meatloaf, or we...
I did, yeah, because, I mean, the great thing about Meatloaf, again, is his honesty. You were talking about... This is a nice little segue. You're talking about Matey's honesty, so we're talking about Meatloaf's honesty. And Meatloaf once said, rock and roll is about getting free beer and getting laid. I mean...
What a guy.
He's right. He is right. And... I mean, he came out with stuff like, he said, I never fit in, I was a true alternative, and I love being the outcast. That's my role in life, to be an outcast.
And yeah.
I think he did embrace what people bracketed him as. He went, you know what, I'm going to be that person, but I'm going to elevate that person to be better than the people that you say I can't be.
Yeah, yeah.
He's been consistent throughout his whole, musical career. He's always been a thing. Like, yeah, he might not ever been like the highest that he ever was in the '70s, but he's always still a thing. I don't know how well known he is to like a younger generation, but for me, obviously, I know who he is.
Yeah, I think he's pretty. He must be well known, surely, because he's kind of like a household name, isn't he? I feel like everyone knows who Meatloaf is.
Yeah, I think that when you first hear the name Meatloaf, surely you think of him and not actual Meatloaf.
Yeah, yeah, I immediately think of him, obviously, because I don't know what Meatloaf is, especially in the UK. We don't really have Meatloaf anyway, do we? So I guess he's always going to be first. But
I don't know if we have the equivalent of Meatloaf, do we?
No, because I still don't know.
There must be something.
I still don't know what Meatloaf is. Even when I look at it, I'm like, what the hell is that? Another little story he told, which is something I never thought about. Meatloaf, you know, Meatloaf was a vegetarian from 1981 to 1992. Obviously, he's called Meatloaf and then he became a vegetarian for 11 years. But he's had one story about, he said he was... He said, there's been vegetarian. He said, there's been vegetarians who wouldn't speak to me because of my name. So I was sitting next to John Bon Jovi and at one of those award things. And I said, oh, man, I love KD Lang. I'd really like to meet her. And they went to find out if it was OK. And she goes, no, his name is Meatloaf. And he said he stopped being a KD Lang fan after that. But
that's just pure snobbery right there.
It's a name. Yeah, come on. It's a name. It's not offensive. Is it offensive to be called Meatloaf to a vegetarian?
I think there's worse things to be called.
Yeah.
To offend a vegetarian.
There definitely is. But that is interesting. He also changed his name from Marvin to Michael, and I can't for the life of me find out why.
Maybe he was getting tired of Marvin the Martian references.
I don't think anyone else thinks like that. No, it might just be your thing.
It might be my thing, but I always find like the limited movies he's been in is quite interesting. For example, Fight Club. I mean, that's the first one that sticks out, is it? I mean, he played a man with breasts, and it's such a wonderful, weird character that he plays, because I think it's so unlike the real Meatloaf, this character.
Yeah.
And I just love that. And the one scene I always remember, which was it was a mistake, but they kept it in the movie, is when Brad Pitt and his gang are walking out of a place all suited in tuxedos, and Meatloaf's at the back and his trousers fall down and he grabs them to put them back up. They left that in the movie. I always find that incredible. It's hilarious that they kept that.
I think I remember that, actually.
You can briefly see it because it's so sped up that you can't see it that well.
Yeah.
But I just love the fact that David Fincher went, no, we'll keep it in.
That is funny, though.
For the humour. And also, he was in Wayne's World. A great. The Shitty Beatles, what are they like? They suck. Oh, it's not just a good name then.
Oh, that is good. He clearly likes to fuck with people as well, because I just googled why he changed his name from Marvin to Michael. He said he legally changed his name to Michael in 1984 because of a jeans commercial. So whatever that means.
Makes sense. Well, I know he used to lie about his age, because he said that. He tells people that he was born in 1947 when he's actually born in 1951. And what asked why, he said just to piss people off, because he doesn't like when people ask how old he is. He just finds it an irrelevant question. So he just does it to consistently lie. And I like that. I like the fact that he's trying to be ambiguous. I kind of like that, because it doesn't really matter. I mean, when someone says how old are you, it's like, does it really matter? In certain aspects, it does matter. Let's put that down and make that concrete. But it doesn't really matter, does it?
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter once you get past a certain age, of course. Who cares anymore? I say once you go past 40, does it really matter? After that, maybe even 30, does it matter?
Yeah, 30 is better.
Maybe 30. Yeah, I'm going to do the same. I'm going to not tell people my age going forward.
I'm just 29 plus experience years now.
Exactly. But yeah, let's move on to the movie that we saw this week. So you should do the explaining, because it's your movie.
Yes, it's not. I didn't make the movie, but yeah. I did pick the movie.
Yeah, I gotta change a lot of these notes then.
I don't know a lot of Romanian, so I'd be very surprised if I made this movie. The movie is called The Death of Mr. Larescu, and it's a Romanian movie from 2005. It's, to sum up, it's about a dying old man who's shuttled from hospital to hospital by a loyal paramedic, as doctors refuse to operate on him and no one can agree on a diagnosis. I had to say straight off the bat, this is probably the hardest movie that I think we've reviewed, or going to review. I don't know if you agree with me.
I would have to agree with you, yeah. Yeah, I was...
It was incredibly hard, this movie, to like dissect.
Yeah. Because you kind of explained what the movie was about, and that's kind of it, isn't it, really, on the basis of it.
Yeah.
It's hard to say much more than that, but it's the journey which you go on from there.
It's an uncomfortable yet kind of funny journey.
I suppose there was a few moments. I wasn't like laughing out loud and crying and stuff, but I don't think it's like a burst out loud laughing, just a few little ones. Yeah, it's a slow movie. Right, you'd have
2 hours and a half.
Yeah, and it feels like 2 hours and a half as well.
It feels its length.
It feels like you're there. It feels like you're on this journey and you can't wait for it to be over. But then you reflect on it and you go, that was an interesting moment. That's kind of what it feels like.
This is the movie that I think you have to see a few times.
You think?
But it's... I do, because I think the first time you question it, and then, like you said, you have to sit back and reflect on what you see and go, yeah, I like it. And then probably like another viewing, you know, the more viewings, you'll find out where you truly stand with the movie. Mm. Having said that, because it's quite a slog, it's hard to really, now you see that, it's hard to elevate yourself and say, all right, I want to watch The Death of Mr. Larescu today.
Yeah.
But it is... It's an uncomfortable movie. It's very natural. It almost feels like a docudrama, doesn't it? It almost feels like a documentary.
Yeah, it does. It does feel like a documentary. It does. It does feel real, doesn't it?
Very real. And I have to say, the actor that plays Mr. Larescu, I don't think I've ever seen an actor that looks that ill playing a character before. He really looks... like a man who's dying.
Yeah.
He really looks like a man who's on his last legs. I don't know if that's good casting or good acting. I don't know a lot about the actor. Obviously, people from Romania or maybe from wherever could shed more light on the actor and know if he's a great actor or if it is just great casting. Nevertheless, it works. Whatever key ingredient that was worked.
Yeah. It's the deterioration of the character, which is probably the most uncomfortable thing about the movie to watch. Yeah, but it's very real, isn't it, in a way? Because it kind of just starts off. It's real in the sense that you people who would be suffering in this way with something would. This is sort of the change of that you would go through. And probably people, you know, start off saying, you know, oh, it's nothing. You've been drinking. You know, this is nothing. This is why you have a headache, all this stuff. And then eventually it becomes more serious. And then it's like, oh, shit. That's kind of quite real. So I think it would resonate with people that have probably been through an experience like this. Personally or...
Or feel it.
Yeah. Scary.
That was my constant
made
thought.
Made me scared.
My constant thought was... It made me scared. My constant thought was, shit, this could be me sometime in the future.
It felt,
It was like eye-opening and scary because I'm kind of one of them people that I don't want to go to the doctors, really.
Same.
That's my last resort. Yeah, I don't go to the doctors. I basically, whatever pain or anguish I'm in, I kind of just be, it'll be okay tomorrow. You know, tomorrow it'll be fine. Everything's going to like... It's like there's like a reset button. It's like I'm playing a video game and I've just died. You just press the reset to continue in 10 seconds and you think, I'll just play it tomorrow and I'll be back to normal. I'll come out and I'm fine. And that's how I feel.
Yeah. That's where it kind of felt kind of real. I was a bit like, oh, no. I don't want this to happen to me, but this could happen to me. So... Yeah, the realism was too good, if anything. So
yeah.
Oh well, but it was good. It was a very good movie. But it's hard to go into the details about completely ruining the movie. It's not a movie you almost want to ruin either. If someone's interested in this movie, it is a good watch. I think it's a hard one to sell to someone though.
It's on very paper. Hard. It's very hard to sell. It's because basically you're saying it's a. Uncomfortable 2.5 hour Romanian movie about a man dying, and that's the gist of it. And it's really slow. It works because the fact that it's so slow really pulls you into the world that they've built.
Yeah.
You feel like you're with them because it's one of your kind of movies. It's all shot on the. In one day, isn't
which
it?
Which I like. I'd like that. I do like that.
It's a continuous journey, and it's a slow journey because that's how it is. You know, in movies, it's always a quick edit. Oh, he's fallen down. Little brief scene in an ambulance, right, and the hospital, right, and now he's in his bed, right, and now his daughter's there, right, and now his wife's there, right, and now he's been told he's going to die, right, and then he has his final goodbyes, and then it ends. That's how this movie would normally play out in a traditional movie.
Yeah.
This one drags it. It drags it so long that you just feel like these are the scenes. It's almost like this is the movie of the cutted floor version of a Hollywood movie of this. It's like this is the long, painstakingly journey which they just cut out and leave on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, and it doesn't really have a... It doesn't really go. It's not a satisfying conclusion either, is it? Which I guess fits with the whole tone of the movie in a way.
It was always never going to be a satisfying film. I think it was. This is obviously a social commentary on healthcare in Romania.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which me and you are least qualified to talk about because we know nothing about this subject, but.
Speak for yourself.
Okay, but I'm guessing that this is a social commentary, and in Romania, I reckon this plays quite well.
Yeah,
because it feels so authentic. And it's a very critically acclaimed movie, worldwide anyway. Because I don't think you have to be Romanian to know. That there's poor healthcare. I don't think you have to live in a country where there's good health care to understand what they're going through. I think this is a journey of fear and kind of denial a little bit. I think there's a strong denial running through this movie.
I think that sums it up.
Both sides.
I think that sums it up. Fear and denial definitely sum that up. Yeah.
Which is death in all its absolute, isn't it? Fear and denial.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, it's a depressing watch as well. So you have to be in the right mind frame to watch it. I don't think I was in the right mind frame to watch this movie.
I had a long day the day I watched it. I watched it after work and I was like, wow, this is heavy. This is heavy stuff to be watching right now.
You have to fit this in at the appropriate time. So sadly,
I don't know when you can fit this movie in. Maybe I mean, this is not really... When do I have a death day? When did I have a day where I reflect my death? You know, I'm not Woody Allen. I don't think about that.
Maybe when we came down with COVID and we were in isolation, I'd say this is a good isolation movie.
If you're possibly
your health is okay and you're not worried about dying from COVID, then maybe don't watch it.
I think this is I tell you what, this is good. This is a good festival movie.
Yeah.
That's where I think this plays well. Because in a festival, you know, if you're going to a film festival, you're in the mood to watch very eclectic movies from all across the world, different genres, different styles, and it's almost like you're going for the art of what it is. Mm. So I think at a film festival, this is where it plays its strongest.
Yeah, which is funny you should say that, because right now is the Sundance Film Festival, isn't it? Which actually kicked off Thursday and obviously ends on the 30th of Jan. So that is happening at the moment, interestingly.
I was like a Sundance one. I did look at the list of movies that were there. I always try and pick out which one's going to be like the potential big boy album.
Yeah, which one do you reckon?
I can't really think of one that stands out enough for me.
Yeah, I might have to agree with you on that one.
I can't. None of them stood out for me. The John Boyega one sounded pretty good, the one that he was starring in. But I'd have to look at the list again. But yeah, I'm not really sure.
Same, to be fair. I've not really invested too much time into it, actually, but it's always interesting. There always spawns like a few great movies, and a few good underground movies. That stick around. This is one of those movies, you're right. This is a very Sundance Film Festival. That sort of audience would love this movie.
Oh, I'm very Cannes. This is a very Cannes movie.
Yeah. Very Cannes.
I can't remember if it was up for the Palme d'Or, I'm not sure. But the director, I'm interested to see more of his work, because I think he's an interesting director. And there's another movie on Netflix he did, Aurora, which is about 3 hours long. So this guy likes to make long movies.
Yeah.
Don't know what the style of that one is, not sure what it's about, but I'm curious. Yeah, I am curious. Mike Lee's actually a fan of this movie, by the way. I don't think you're surprised by that statement.
No, I'm not surprised by that statement, actually. It is a very Mike Lee
movie. This fits in his sort of world.
Yeah, it does. It does fit in his sort of world.
And it kind of reminded me a lot of... there was a movie I really like. I really want to see it again. It's a Turkish movie called Once Upon a Time in Anatolia.
Yeah.
And it's a three-hour Turkish movie about the police going with a convicted criminal who takes them to like a desert area to find the bodies of the people we killed. And it's like that. It's really, I like it more. Once Upon a Time in Anatolia, I really like. But it's such a slow burn and it's just atmospheric. And it's just a lot, long takes of just people standing and doing nothing, as a lot of people would probably say.
Yeah, which are always a bit sluggish to watch, but you know
they can be.
They can be. They absolutely can be. Great stuff. So what have we got? Where would you put this movie? I feel like we didn't. Did we rank the last movie? Have we just completely forgotten?
I don't know if we ranked it, but we liked it. I think we probably knew where we ranked it. It was probably good. Unless we're going by the reviews that we read. They were bad.
They were bad.
Let's and one of them was a what the fuck.
Yes. Yes. A few of them were. A few of them, I don't think, really understood what they were watching. I'd put this movie in good. I think it would be just one of those movies.
It can't be anywhere else, can it, really?
Yeah, it's just one of those movies that's it's a hard sell. That's the only way to certain people. You can't go around being like, hey, everyone should watch this movie. You should be like, he would like this movie. She might like this movie. He won't.
I don't know who I could recommend this movie to. I liked it, but it's one that I have to say, can you recommend it? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I mean, because you really have to say to people, oh yeah, you should like this 2.5 hour movie. It's very depressing. And basically the story I gave you is what happens. There's no twists or turns to the story. That's the story.
Yeah.
And people are like, okay.
It's as far as it goes.
Yeah. It's pretty much like watching... It's like watching real footage of someone dying, really. That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's real life is what it is. That's probably the most depressing thing about it, actually. The most depressing thing is its qualities.
But yeah. I am glad I've finally seen it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad I've seen it as well. But are the top fives back this week? Are we back
they
to
are.
The top fives?
They wow. are. And it was incredibly hard to do a top five about the death of Mr. Larescu. What was I going to do? Top five hospital admissions? Top five deaths? It was difficult. So, in the news today, or this week, I should say, reports of another movie, old movie, turning into a TV show. Fatal Attraction is going to come onto Paramount Plus, and they've already confirmed that Joshua Jackson is set to star in it alongside Lizzie Caplan. I don't mind Joshua Jackson. I think he's quite underrated. I liked him in the TV series The Affair. I thought he was pretty good in that. But it's one that I thought, like, did they really need to bring that one back? Because the story is about a man having an affair with a woman who gets a bit psychotic. I can see them doing a bit of a twist on this one, because in that one, it's a bit like Glenn Close is just crazy bitch. And Michael Douglas is just, you know, he's just a cheater, but he doesn't deserve that. Whereas I think they're going to put more of a turn on it in terms of show more of her side in the story, which is fair enough. But I don't really think the story is not like completely original that you just think like, I mean, Play Misty, for me, for example, was made in 1971. And that's pretty much the same story as Fatal Attraction. And there's so many different versions of the story. They're pretty much the same. They echo throughout the years. Did they really need to call it Fatal Attraction or just say a blah, blah title itself? Because, I mean, Fatal Attraction itself, it's not like it's a movie I think a lot of people really talk about these days anyway. So it's not like it's got a namesake to it. So I just thought that was an interesting one
to bring in. I don't fully get that, to be honest.
Neither did I.
I guess that's the advertising perspective of it, though, isn't it? That's the pull for the TV show. So you instantly know what it's about. That's the way to bring in an audience. I think that's a bad way to do it, because that's trying to go for a quick win and hoping they all stick around. Whereas if it's not up to the standards of the movie or what people are expecting, they're going to watch an episode and be like, nah, fuck this. So I'm not so sure that's a good idea.
I'm not so sure either. So my top five today is related to that. It's top five films adapted to TV series we hope never to see.
Yep. And I've done this. Go on, sorry.
I say I've got a list of five here. I don't know how you've done it, but I've gone for a list of five movies that, to my knowledge, are not in the pipeline to be made and haven't been made before. Maybe yep. there have been little variations in the past, but to my knowledge, nothing that wasn't like a more like a complementary thing to something that's really trying to take the story and direct it somewhere else. So I picked five movies, and I don't know how you've planned this.
I've done it not. Sorry, there's a motorbike speeding in the background at the time when I was talking. I've picked five movies because obviously there's a lot of movies in the world, and I was thinking, is there any movie which I'm really passionate about not becoming a TV show? And I don't know if there is, but I've picked five movies that are a realistic realistically could become TV shows based on the old money. So I've gone down the big box office blockbuster movie route for my five. So I haven't gone like, I don't know. Just struggling to think of an example, but you know what I mean.
Mr. Lowski?
Yeah, it's been like, that's not my dad's TV
what,
show.
That's an honorary mention though. I didn't put it in there, but I don't know if I could watch like six episodes of The Death of Mr. Lowski. If they're an hour each, six episodes, that would be very difficult to watch. That.
Nor can I. But this is what I've gone for. I've gone for like household movie names that potentially could be. I don't think they're going to be, but I also hope they're not either. But yeah, here we go. But so all of these five could break my heart, but let's go for it. You can start if you want.
Let's dive in. No, you go number five.
Number five is James Bond. Now, the reason why I chose this is because there have been rumors of potential. It just there's not been anything concrete from anyone, really. It's just like people were talking about it. But it almost seems like a step that that could be taken with this movie now that Daniel Craig's era is over and there could be a new James Bond, or they might just never do it again. But I feel like I really hope they don't make it into a TV show, because it's the beauty of waiting every 5 or 6 years for one of these movies that makes it so good as well. So, but you can imagine they're so realistic that they could make it into it. I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest. So I've gone for that.
That's my number three.
Is it? So our list may be similar. Go on,
same principle. Well, I think how you summed that up was right. It's too cinematic.
Yeah.
I think that's the reason why I put it on there. I just think the set pieces alone, I know I haven't seen the Winter Soldier, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, or Wonder Vision. I haven't seen the Marvel ones. I know that they're meant to be quite cinematic, and obviously Game of Thrones had the same thing. But I'm guessing same with Lord of the Rings. Mm. But I just think, one, I've always thought of James Bond as a bit of, it's like, I wouldn't say cheap candy, but it's reasonably priced candy. It's, you know, it's just a nice little filling, you know. It's never been deep. And I know they try and deepen it, and they've tried throughout the years to deepen it, and I always think it falls flat. It's basically spy kills bad guy. All Bond needs to be for me. I really don't need it to be anything more grandiose than that. And to world build James Bond would take away James Bond, because unless they did it like MacGyver or something, if they did like a MacGyver or I can't remember his name, the one that Tom Selleck played.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, where it's Chuck Norris and Tex the Bounty Hunter.
Yeah.
No, Texas Walker Ranger. Walker Texas Ranger, that's it.
Yeah.
Not the Bounty Hunter. got that wrong. Where it's just James Bond completing missions, like solo missions on every episode, and it changes every episode.
Yeah.
That's the only way I would be on board with it, if it was completely disposable. That kind of, you know, that kind of TV, you know, it sounds harsh when I say it, but not every TV show needs to be of high quality. I used to miss the disposable TV shows, the ones that were just like, for example, CSI, where it's just they had to solve that crime that week, that episode, and it, at the end of the episode, everything was resolved. I do miss TV shows like that. They were just disposable. It didn't matter what position you watched. It didn't matter if you missed an episode 1 week, because you could get back into it. There was no overriding theme. It was just pretty singular. It's like Simpsons, you know? It was that episode ends as soon as the... That story ends as soon as the episode ends.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Now everything is... Every series is building up to something grand at the end, isn't it? Like, really, every episode is just like another piece of the puzzle. And then the puzzle is done at the end. Yeah, it's never like, oh my God, this is mad. Things happening here. Wow, conclusion. And then we start a new story. It is, yeah. It's a never-ending story until the end. And sometimes it doesn't even end that series. It just carries on to the next series. Well, and you're still in the same story.
Stranger Things. It's like building up to something. But by the end of season three, you go, yeah, but to what? It still doesn't make any sense to me.
No.
And I mean, one of my favorite TV shows ever, and you'll probably know this anyway, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah.
Now, the great thing about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which I always hoped that Stranger Things was going to do, was every episode was an individual story. Buffy had to fight off some demon, some vampire, blah, blah, blah. But in the background, leading to the final episodes, there was always the big villain. The big villain was always there in the background doing its mastermind work. And then the final couple of episodes, Buffy has to defeat the big villain.
Mm.
Perfect. That, to me, is perfect episode staging. And I just don't think that happens anymore. I really hope it does, and I hope to be proved wrong, but it just doesn't happen anymore.
It's rare. There probably is TV shows out there like that, but it is very, very rare. Buffy is an interesting one because that's such a product of its time, isn't it? Like that is the perfect show for that era. The music, everyone was listening to that type of music at that time. People were dressing at that time. There was an obsession with sort of vampires and horror movies at that time. That is such a product of its time, isn't it?
Like, and the other great thing about it is it was based on a movie that Joss Whedon wrote in 1992, which flopped, and then they turned that into a successful TV show. And I actually like the movie. It's not that bad. It's actually really quite fun. But my brain's gone. That's an example of a interesting film adaptation to TV.
Yeah. You did love that show, didn't you?
Oh yeah,
you loved that show.
Great show. Great show.
Do you remember?
Again, I wouldn't mind if that came back. I think that would be interesting to come back, especially for like this generation. I think that it could be quite interesting. But I think it's still pretty timeless that they don't need to bring it back.
No,
but
they don't need
to. I'm not surprised.
It is timeless, right? It is timeless. Do you know, I always remember I used to have Top Trumps. I used to love Top Trumps when I was a kid. That was such a big game, and I remember having the Buffy the Vampire Slayer Top Trumps, and I can picture the images perfectly in my head of all the characters, and I just remember that really well. I don't know why that's come to me, but it has. I used to love Top Trumps. That was class.
You did have a lot of Top Trumps.
That was a good game. I don't know what it was. It was just
never played it. You just collected the cards.
Oh no, I did play it, but I did. It was a collection thing. It's almost like something I wish I'd sort of hung on to because it's such a nostalgic little thing now, isn't it? Like it's actually, yeah. I don't know. Anyway,
I always remember my VCR, the VHSs of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I remember having them. I had the Becoming one, and I had like the first couple episodes of season 4, maybe some more.
Yeah.
But I always remember that as well.
Yeah, that was always cool having those, man. Just the fact that you had to rewind them and stuff.
Which, funny enough, I mean, I always remember the first time we got a DVD when I was, I can't remember how old we would have been when DVDs came out, like 10, 11, something like that.
Mm.
I always remember at the end of the DVD trying to rewind it.
Like, no, you don't need to do that. You don't need to do that.
It was like mind blown. That's how I felt at the time. I was like, mind is blown.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's even more like DVD. Like, how are DVDs so nostalgic now? Well, you think about like a DVD menu. That is like quite nostalgic now, isn't it? The idea that you have a menu.
Especially
before
the crappy
you click
ones.
The film. Yeah. The crappy little
or the
DVD
long-winded menu. Ones. The ones that just feel like the menu goes on forever. It's like such a preview that build up to the menu, isn't it? Like the X-Men one. I always remember the X-Men because you walk through like the areas and you go through the doors before it gets to the main bit where you pick the movie. And that felt like that went on forever before you could press play. And you can't skip them either.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were so cool. There's something weird about them. And there's always little Easter eggs as well, weren't there, in them? Like you could click a random thing and then unlock a clip or something. You'd be like, what?
The one I always remember is Me, Myself and Irene, that one. Because at the bottom, they've got the pill. And you click the pill, it says, do you want to take the pill, yes or no? And if you put no, suddenly he turns into Hank. And suddenly, you know, it goes crazy and all the music changes and Jim Carrey's hair changes. Because now he's not who he was before. He's the bad version of himself. And I thought that was great.
That is good. I think that's like, with, you know, when you stream a movie, you kind of miss out on some of the little bits like that, like some of the little like deleted scenes. Like some of them are stupid, like some special features, literally like TV spots, don't know that they have.
Oh, yeah.
On there.
I never understood the trailer stuff. That was
the trailers and there's like deleted scenes. I used to love director commentary on certain, like if I loved the movie or I loved the TV show and I was just watching it again. I put on the commentary and then they'd be watching it with you and then they'd just be commentating on certain scenes and telling stories about it. That was, I fucking loved that. That's so nerdy, but I loved that. I did it with like Family Guy and stuff. Like I'd watch Family Guy commentary and then they would talk about how they wrote a joke in and they'd be like, oh, we actually had this joke in there, but we had to get rid of it. And it was good. It was, yeah. It was just interesting. Anyway, I mean, I miss those audio commentaries. And one thing I miss about not having DVDs anymore, actually.
I do as well. I think they should bring that back anyway for streaming. I think that'd be interesting to have it on the side.
I think so too.
If you want commentary. I just think, you know, for like the nerds in us, yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah, that'd be great. Why not? Why not? I want to hear about this shit. I love this movie. I want to hear more about it. Anyway. So you haven't even chosen your number five.
I haven't even said my number five, but we deviated completely to talk about DVDs and VHS and all that crap. My number five is a silly one. Dude, Where's My Car? I don't think you could make that into a TV show. I just think he'd find his car in the second episode. I think there's nothing...
How did they even make that into a movie?
It's anyway. Like an hour and 18 minutes long.
Is it?
Now, at the time, I remember when this movie came out, it's huge. Every friend of mine was talking about, oh, dude, you got a tattoo. What does it say? Sweet. What did yours say? Dude. And then that, let me tell you, I've never really liked this movie. And I can think of nothing worse than having to watch like 6 to 8 episodes of it. And it being even worse than the fucking original movie.
It would be unbearable. This is a terrible, terrible movie. This is a bad movie. I don't think there's anything more to say about it. Is there really? You couldn't make this into a TV show.
You couldn't, but I could see them doing it. That's the thing. I could see them making this kind of thing. And
how?
For the life of me, no. Well, there's a lot of things that you think, how have they done that? And they did it. So I say no, and I hope they don't.
Yeah.
I can imagine like My Name Is Earl kind of like theme with Dude, Where's My Car. I think they would do that.
I think you'll be all right. But yeah, let's also hope. But I think we should be fine. Just out of interest, who would play people in that?
Oh, we didn't even talk about like who was going to play people. I don't know. That's a really hard one. I suppose, could they bring back the original? Could they bring back Ashton Kutcher and Sean William Scott? I mean, they're not doing a lot. They could easily come back for that.
Sean William Scott's not doing a lot, is he? Ashton Kutcher's just kind of being Ashton Kutcher, isn't he? What is Sean William Scott doing? Not yet, not a lot. Not a lot.
Oh, I can't think of anybody. Nobody that I'd think would improve it anyway. So, yeah, I don't know. My answer is bring back the originals.
Yeah.
In my idea.
It's good enough for me.
I mean, who's playing Bond, though? We didn't say who we thought was playing Bond.
Oh, it'd be somebody. It depends where
Kit
it goes.
Harrington. It'll be a TV like kind of actor.
Yeah, a TV person. So it'd make it even worse. My number four. Austin Powers. Now, I can imagine something stupid like this happening. I'm also like, all of my movies are like, I've picked things where you like it, you could explore the universe and there could be more stories to tell of these characters. Austin Powers, they could literally do, I don't know, they could set it at a certain point. They could set it in the 60s when Austin Powers was around, before he froze himself, all that stuff. This is one thing where I think that I could imagine them doing this because the character's so iconic.
Like a young Sheldon.
Yeah.
Young Austin Powers.
Yeah, a young Austin Powers sort of thing. They could easily do that. You know, the spawn of Austin Powers, even. I don't know. Austin Powers is son in the future.
Son of Powers.
Yeah. Dustin Powers or son. So they could call him. No, I wouldn't want to see
this. They work on that.
I wouldn't want to see this become a TV show. Also, Mike Myers wouldn't be in it, so I can imagine he would sell it though. If they said, "Hey, we'll pay you,"
I can imagine he'd be in it.
He'd be like, "All right, fuck it."
I imagine he'd be in it. I honestly, if they made like a young Austin Powers, I imagine he'd play like every adult character
in that movie,
like the teachers. Probably the mother, the father, the granddad, grandmother. He'd play everybody.
It wouldn't surprise me. It really wouldn't surprise me. But yeah, Austin
Powers. He likes to do that. He likes to dress up.
Austin Powers number four for me. What's your number four?
Rocky.
I went for Rocky. I actually had this at my number four before I remembered James Bond existed, and then I knocked out Rocky for James Bond. And Austin Powers kept its place. Yeah, I had Rocky as well because it's a boxing. I can fully imagine that being a TV show with the elements of the story.
Well, the reason I picked Rocky is because I don't think you need to make it a TV show because it's pretty much episodic anyway. Like the whole of the journey is episodic anyway. You see the rise and fall of Rocky. What else is there left? I mean. You've seen it all. What are you going to put in the middle of it? What are you going to extend? I mean, it's pretty much there. And not only that, but they brought out a director's cut of Rocky IV recently this year and last year anyway.
You know they'd find a way.
They would, but the only way they'd find a way, and this is another reason, you either do old Rocky, which I don't really know what you can do with old Rocky anymore. They've explored that in Rocky Balboa. They explored that in Creed 1 and 2. And they're moving on with Creed now without Rocky. Again, another reason why they shouldn't do it, because it's time to retire Rocky and let's move on with Creed. Let's have a new journey, which is a new and exciting and younger journey. But the only way that you could really do it is if you recast Rocky Balboa. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, if we did what character would you never like to see be recast, Rocky Balboa would be number one for me. Because I think Sylvester Stallone and Rocky Balboa are so intertwined, it's hard to tell when he's being Rocky and when he's being Sylvester, if you know what I mean. The fact that their careers are exactly the same. Sylvester Stallone's had highs, he's had rock bottoms. Same with Balboa. They're just intertwined. And also he wrote the character. This character came from him having nothing. He struggled to get this movie made when he made it originally. They didn't even want him to be in it. They wanted like a Burt Reynolds to be in it. They didn't want Sylvester Stallone because he wasn't a big name. And he fought tooth and nail to get this role, and he's had it for so long that for me, I think it lives and dies with Sly. And I couldn't accept, and I'm pretty sure the majority of Rocky fans would agree with me, I couldn't accept another person playing Rocky. It would just... It's like... It's the equivalent of I'm trying to think of a great equivalent, because I had a great equivalent, and I don't want to say it now. We'll skip the great equivalent, but you know what I mean? It's just like... It just makes you feel uneasy.
Could you imagine Sylvester Stallone liking the idea of a TV show?
I think he'd dabble in the idea. I do think he'd dabble.
Yeah?
Because I think he would... He's got a lot of love for Rocky. He's got a lot of love for that character. He's brought it back so many times. I mean, the whole... He hated Rocky V. And he really wanted to come back and give it a final blessing. That was what Rocky Balboa was about. He gave it his final swan song. It's a beautiful film. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And that's how it ended until obviously Creed came out and then blew us out of the water with just another great entry into Rocky Balboa. And I think I was certainly surprised when I saw Creed. I didn't expect it to be as nearly as great as it was. I haven't seen Creed 2. I know you have, and you rate it quite well.
So yeah.
Creed 3, Michael B. Jordan's directing that now. So it's going on its own trajectory. But yeah, I think he'd dabble. I think he'd be curious enough. I don't know if he would find a good enough story, but I think he'd be curious. Why wouldn't he be curious? I think he would.
Well, because while you were saying this, I just searched up to see if that ever was a thing or it ever been discussed. And lo and behold, Mr. Sylvester Stallone himself posted on Instagram two bits of paper of him, his scribbles of his idea for a Rocky prequel that takes place in the 60s that really gets to the heart of the Rocky characters, is what he said. And you should look it up if you get a chance, just to see. It's just a picture of his notepad that he's just written down loads of scribbles, and he imagines a 10 episode seasons, 10 episodes for a few seasons. He's being very optimistic as they get to the heart of the characters in their younger years. And yeah, has that taken off yet? May last year he posted this, so
I just can't. I honestly can't see
looking for another payday from this movie.
Who plays Rocky Balboa? I mean, because it's so sly.
Yeah.
And if you know what I mean, there's some actors that if someone plays them, you're almost parodying the person that came before you, and you'd have to parody Sly. And I just think it would just be too... It's hard to do a Sly impression without it being comedic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Sly is the only one that can do Sly and be serious. I think if anyone else did Sly, I think it would come off as a spoofing him. And I just don't know if that would work. He'd have to be a good actor or a good approach. So I'm not...
Yeah,
I'm unsure.
I'm unsure as well. But hey, even Sylvester thinks so. So you never know. My number three is Back to the Future. Number three. Now, this is just one I can imagine being a potential TV show, because the little machine could take them all to different parts of their lives, and they could end up in a whole big muddle of changing this, changing that, doing this, doing that, blah, 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 blah. I can see it happening. Also, with the updated technology in the world, they could... Yeah, they could do a lot with this and bring it back up to date. But I don't want to see it. I really don't want to see it, but I can imagine it. Also, it still holds a lot of cultural relevance, doesn't it, today? Everyone sort of knows about this movie. And everyone sort of loves this movie. So if they did bring it back, there would be an intrigue to watch it. But don't do it.
This is actually my number one.
I was intrigued to see if we would have some of the same ones. It seemed like we were on the same line of thinking here.
Apart from
where's my car?
No, that was my like silly one, and then I couldn't do like five silly ones because I was starting to run out of ideas. But yeah, Back to the Future. The reason is I know Zemeckis and Bob Gale, hands down, do not ever want to see this be remade. So TV show is less likely. I can't remember. I think there was an animated show of this.
Really?
But I don't think. I think there was. I'm not entirely sure. I think there was, but I don't think it holds a lot of relevance. I think it was more like a side show, if you know what I mean. It's not really going to impact the legacy of Back to the Future because I don't think a lot of people remember it anyway.
Did it come out? It did. It came out in the 90s. Now, this segues a little bit. Sorry to cut in. But this segues a little bit to something that I had noticed because I was quite intrigued about this top five because I was like, I want to look at how many TV shows have been made that I didn't realize had been made from a movie. And there were a few. And there seems to be a pattern that was forming in the 90s where there was this weird obsession with turning live action movies into animated TV shows. And yeah. I don't know.
What happened with Beetlejuice?
Why? What was the obsession? Do you know, there was another movie that was turned into an animated show that I didn't know existed, which was Dumb and Dumber. They did a series of Dumb and Dumber animated.
And I know they did The Mask because we used to
did The
to
Mask
watch
and they did Ace Ventura as well. So they were obsessed with doing
Jim
Carrey
movies. I remember watching that one, Ace Ventura, yeah.
But Dumb and Dumber.
I remember Jumanji. That was another one.
Dumb and Dumber is really funny because they didn't get Jim Carrey or Jeff Daniels in it. They got two people that just did an impression of them. And it just kind of looks like Powerpuff Girls, cheap. like the animations kind of looks like the Powerpuff Girls. But it's just a weird obsession with turning live action movies into animated series in the 90s, and I don't really know why.
The craziest one that I know of is The Toxic Avenger.
The Toxic Avenger.
They turned that into a kids show. The Toxic Avenger is a trauma movie about a bully that gets turned into toxic waste. It's just the most raunchy R-rated sex horror comedy gore fest of the 80s. And they turned it into an 80s or 90s animated TV show for kids. Like, what the fuck was their thought process there?
That is a bit odd.
That is the oddest one. Beetlejuice was another one they made into an animated show.
I didn't know that. I need to see what this looks like now. Beetlejuice
TV
show.
It looks weird. It does look very weird.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it. He looks kind of goofy. He looks like Who does he look like? He looks like what's his name? He looks like John Lovitz. The Beetlejuice animated character. Yeah. It looks like John Lovitz has played him and they've animated it from there. Yeah, that doesn't look right. Nah. Stupid.
Yeah, they had a strange obsession back then.
They did. There's a lot of examples. There's a lot of examples. The Ghostbusters, they turned into...
Which I know a lot of people love, that one.
A lot of people do love that one, but that's where it spawns from, isn't it? Like, ones that do well, they're like same with like X-Men. They were like, oh, brilliant. TV show, let's do it. Although to be fair, that actually came
before
X-Men
was the other way. That
actually came before the movie. Ghostbusters just went. Yeah, that's another one where they're just like, ah, yeah, it did well, so let's turn everything else into it and see how much money we can get out of this. That's rubbish. Not a fan.
No, exactly. And Back to the Future. I just think the other thing about it is the sequels are passable. Like part two, part three. I like parts of them. I think they're fun, but the first one for me is a masterpiece. It's a classic. It's one of the great comedies, movies ever made. I hold up that high. Back to the Future is high for me as one of the great movies ever made.
Mm-hmm.
And the sequels to it, a nice little added fun, but they're not great. it does. They never live up to what Back to the Future is.
Yeah.
And I just think, like, you're forever going to be bowing down to the original. Why bother doing it? And I can't imagine a Back to the Future TV show which doesn't feel... Do you know what I'd feel it would do? Is what the new Fresh Prince of Bel-Air looks like it's doing, which is just taking it too seriously. And I look at it and I... The Bel-Air one, for example, I look at it and I think, why don't you just make your own thing about a kid, you know, about a kid who's going through this problem? Why does it need to be Bel-Air?
Yeah.
Because it's so drastically different that, one, people that like The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air won't see anything here that they like of the original anyway. And two, younger people probably have never even seen Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. So why exactly have you used the title? I don't
know. It's marketing,
really...
isn't it? It's the SEO of it all. They know it's going to get attention. They know it's going to... They know the trailer will go viral and stuff like this. They know it's going to get something. But that's their short-term wins. Like, the longevity of the TV show is probably not going to hold up.
It'd probably be a great TV show.
It could be,
but
it won't be.
Because it's going in a different angle. But I don't know why it needs to always, like, grip itself to something else that show that is relevant.
Yeah. The problem with it is, the thing, like, if it's not good... The thing that gave it its chance is the same thing that's going to make it fade away faster.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Because people would be like, "Nah, that was rubbish," and then they'd soon move on. And then in a couple of years' time, they'd be like, "Oh, do you remember that they made that Bel Air TV show?" We'll be talking about it in the same way we're talking about the Beetlejuice animated show. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Just a forgotten memory.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. TV. Not worth it. How do we want to do this? Because you've got two left, I've got two left now. So
I've got one left.
Have you? Yeah. I will save yours. I'll skim through mine then. I've got two left.
Number two. You've done number three, so we're both on number two now. So you go number two.
Yeah, number two is Harry Potter. Again, another realistic one that could potentially be a TV show because there's a lot to explore. I could imagine they would focus on Voldemort. His character when he was a kid before he obviously turned into the monster that he is. They could focus on his time there. They could focus on Tom Riddle, it would be his name. They could focus on a young Tom Riddle.
I just noticed
on how he became...
all of your top five essentially origin stories.
The origin stories, because I can imagine it happening. The thing is that everyone is going to look at Star Wars, right, as an example, because it's actually good. The Star Wars TV shows I've seen,
you say that, but
are actually good.
That one I've heard is not so good.
I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know where that's from.
Yeah, but I've just heard like negative reviews in the ether.
I'll have to watch it and decide, but I really liked The Mandalorian. I thought that was amazing. So there's potential. There's potential for Star Wars, I think, to be successful with other shows and stuff like that. But I had to say, yeah, Harry Potter, don't do it. Don't touch it. I can imagine
they
would.
Touch it.
I think they will. I think they will as well.
I think there's so much, especially now it's been 20 years and they're really building that up. And you got Fantastic Beasts, which you can say, all right, that's going to sort of feed some of the fans for a while, but I just think it's going to happen. And there's a lot of world building to be had there, especially with like Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings. If Lord of the Rings does fantastic for Amazon, Harry Potter will be a TV series.
Yeah,
my
yeah, I could see it coming as well. I'm not writing that off as a possibility, but I don't like it still. Not that I'm a big Potter nerd, and I would be protective of Potter because I wouldn't, but. I just don't want to see any more of it. It's sort of like it's in a good place. I think Lord of the Rings is sort of like faded away by the wayside a little bit, hasn't it? Like people don't talk about that movie like they talk about Star Wars and Harry Potter. Like people like that movie, but because they did The Hobbits after that, it's kind of like, and they weren't that great, so it's kind of like its stock has fallen a little bit, hasn't it? It's not got a very high stock that Harry Potter has as and Star Wars has. Star Wars stock fell, and then they redid the movies, and it kind of jumped up again. And some of the TV shows have done the same thing. So, yeah, I don't know. It would be a risky move for its legacy. Stock could fall, and they'll be like, let's never speak of it again. It could be one of those ones. But yeah, Harry Potter number two.
Okay, my number two is Forrest Gump.
Oh.
The main reason I picked this one is the movie's so good at showing you like clips, little short clips of Forrest Gump's life, like him meeting these various people, John Lennon, Elvis Presley, him going to ping pong championships, meeting all the presidents, the Bubba Shrimp thing. It's like a clip show of his life that I think it's edited so well. It's another Zemeckis movie, I realized.
Yeah.
It's edited so well. How can you extend that? How can you drag out the scene where he meets Elvis Presley and he teaches Elvis Presley to dance? How can you drag out the scene where he goes on the ping pong championship? Or how can you drag out the scene where he does the marathon? I can't see how they can do that movie. I know there's a sequel to the book, and there's always been talk about doing a Forrest Gump sequel,
yeah,
which I think is more likely. But I can also think they would be saying, hey, why don't we just make a TV show instead? Like a limited series TV show. And I hope it never happens, because I think it's of its time. And again, I think the beauty of it is the fact that Forrest Gump gets in these situations and you're not really sure how he got onto him.
Yeah.
But if you expand on that, I think the magic would be lost.
I agree. I think the magic would be lost as well. That's an interesting one, because I wouldn't even ever really thought about that. But yeah, that is an interesting one. Do you think they would? Like, who would play Forrest Gump? That's an iconic character. Who could possibly play him?
The interesting thing about Forrest Gump is I think that is one that you could parody in a way that because it's quite light-hearted drama.
Yeah.
I think the parody wouldn't be too bad. I'm trying to think off the top of my head who would be an interesting Forrest Gump. And I don't know why the first name that came to my head was Tom Hiddleston.
Really?
I don't know why. Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know, because I thought
a parody. I don't know why either.
He's quite good at like doing impressions of actors. He's quite a good impressionist, so I wonder whether he would be a good Forrest Gump. That would be an interesting shout. I'm not too sure. At the top of my head, Tom Hiddleston's the first name that popped out.
That is a weird one. Yeah, that is a weird first one. But I couldn't for the life of me imagine anyone else playing that character. No, it doesn't ring any bells at all. But yeah, I think you'll be all right with that one. I don't think many people are going to touch that one and make it into a TV show.
I just had my reasons why it wouldn't be a good TV show.
Yeah. My number one?
Yep, my number one's Back to the Future, as we discussed earlier.
I did. I'm surprised you didn't select this one. Now, my number one has actually been made into an animated TV show, but that's not my concern. My concern is, it's already existed as a TV show at some point in time, but a very long time ago. Let's just say that much. So my fear is that it could be remade into its more darker roots that we see it today. It's the best version of itself that it currently exists, and that is Batman. Now, they're obviously bringing it back as a movie, and Robert Pattinson's going to play that character. But this is something which, I don't know, this is kind of a route which I'm almost expecting things to start going down with Marvel making, you know, delving into sort of TV shows. That there is potential for them to like go, let's make a Spider-Man TV show, and that almost becoming the future of Marvel. I can imagine that actually happening. And whether DC and Batman would follow suit would be interesting.
They are already, aren't they? DC have been doing it for a while. I mean, yeah. Peacemakers recently came out, and I know they've got Gotham and they've got I don't know, not Daredevil. Not the Punisher. Was it Supergirl, Superwoman, something? Batgirl was the one. I know they got Batgirl, so they are going down that route. So I can see
that's why my fear. Yeah,
you're guessing.
That's my fear. But would it happen? I feel like the character is very iconic. That it would be, it would be risky for it to happen. But hey, there is definitely potential for this to be a reality in a couple of years' time. There's no doubt about it. Seems to be that TV, I don't know what it is, TV show, because TV shows are so watered down, they're like a watered down version of movies, because they kind of have to be for budget reasons. But I think there's too much TV now. Do you feel like that?
Yeah, I feel that at the moment. It feels like the movies that would have been movies are now TV shows.
Yeah.
It's almost like, unless you're a big franchise, your movie's going to struggle to be made or seen. So we're going to turn it into a TV show because it's got more of a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be fair, there are... I like TV shows. TV shows are good. I find it difficult to get into certain TV shows. And there's a lot of... People love them. There are like Succession and stuff like that.
They fucking binge watch them, don't they?
Yeah, some people...
wonder why.
They kill it and they're like, oh, now I have to wait a year for the next series, and you're like, yeah, because you just watched it in 2 days. That took them like almost a year to make, and you've watched it in 2 days, and you expect series two to be out tomorrow. This is the problem.
Yeah, they won't watch The Irishman,
and that's The Irishman's too long.
That's too long, but they'll watch six episodes of Stranger Things.
It's a mentality thing, isn't it? It's the same with when I watch an hour long TV show, it doesn't feel like an hour, and then I could watch two or three, and I've watched 3 hours of TV. But then putting on a 3-hour movie is a harder thing to do, because you're like, oh, do I want to commit to that whole movie? But TV shows, you can just there's a lot of TV shows I haven't watched it. But then one I've started watching actually recently, which I've really enjoyed, and I didn't know if I would enjoy it because I thought it would be a bit Riverdale-y, is Euphoria. Really, really good show, and just surprised me actually how good it is. It's just good. It's like a coming of age sort of thing, but it's not too corny. It's quite out there. It's got its dark elements. It's got its it's not afraid. It's not afraid to go to certain places. So it's a good one. It's definitely a good one. It's the one with Zendaya, and she narrates it.
Yeah,
yeah. It's good. I mean, surprised me.
I'm going to try and watch more TV this year. I don't watch a lot of TV shows. I'm going to try to. There's a few that have piqued my interest throughout the years. I like to pick them up. But like you said, there's just too many place. It's hard to. It's not like you used to have like on normal TV, just there, watch that every Friday.
Mm.
And you could get into that pattern. I watch that every Friday at 8 p.m. Fine. That's my schedule. It's nice to have a schedule. When you don't have that schedule, you're like, how the fuck do you do this?
Well, I like when Netflix release a show and then they release the next episode a week later on that date. I like that. I like to know that I have a whole week to watch an episode and then the next one's out and then I have a whole week to watch that. I like that. Well,
that's the fear of the world at the moment, is that people binge watch stuff so quickly that things start to trend on Twitter, friends start to talk about things. And you're only on episode 2 and they're on episode 5.
Yeah, they ruin it.
Whereas when it was, weekly, when it was weekly released, everyone was on the same page. Hey, guys, did you watch Lost on Friday? What did you think? That was how it was, because you only had one episode a week coming out. And it's a lot easier to just do that and also have a life.
Yeah, it is. I hate it when I like, here's 10 episodes, fucking get your teeth stuck into that. I don't like that at all. I don't like it. I like not to have the option.
Yeah, I like to
take the option away from it, yeah.
I like to crave it, yeah. There's something nice about craving something, getting it, and then being slightly disappointed, but still craving it.
Yeah, but still, yeah, exactly, still craving it, that's the main thing. But, yeah, there you go. What I was thinking was, before we move on, That was my number one, obviously. Is there a movie that you would, just the one, because I couldn't, I think it'd be stupid to number top five, but one movie that you would actually like to see turned into a TV show?
Well, there's one that I need to see more of, which did turn into a TV show. Well,
that's not the question.
I know, but I'm really struggling because the last one I really thought about was Westworld. When I first saw that, and I knew they were making a TV show, but I saw the movie and I thought, you know what, this was before it obviously was released, but I remember watching the movie thinking, you know what, this would be a really good TV show. And it did turn into a good TV show, the first season anyway. I stopped watching after that, but I need to get back into it. This is a tough one because I'm trying to think. I'm now trying to think because there's so many alliterations of movies that become TV shows and vice versa. I'm trying to think of one that hasn't. And so I'm picking out new ones. I'm picking out new movies in my head. Do you know, I can't think exactly. I'll tell you who I would like to see do a TV show, whether he picked one of these movies to do it. I think Quentin Tarantino would be good at making a TV show. Whether that's Once Upon a Time in America, or if he did Kill Bill, who knows, or whatever. I think, especially how he's making movies these days, where I think he wants to basically make novels, I think he'd get more space to fill. So I think I'd be interested in Tarantino going down the TV option.
That's not a bad shout. That's definitely not a bad shout at all. I can imagine that happening.
I know he's very cinematic, but these days, TV isn't that far off movies, is it? In terms of, they might not have the big, big budgets, but they still get a pretty decent budget. And also the actors, I mean, there's a lot more of a pool of actors now. It used to be you just got TV actors, but now...
Yeah.
The line of TV and movie actors is blurred.
I always think the ones that should be turned into TV shows are the ones where they keep making crap movies of the same thing over and over again. Yeah. And actually, the one I just came to my head there, I just Googled it to see if it did exist. And it is going to exist this year, which is slightly annoying. So I was going to say Resident Evil, but they're actually making a TV series to come out this year. For Resident Evil. But that makes sense because they've made so many shit movies that it's just like, try a TV show. You're already killing the product.
I think it's too late. Yeah, I mean, The Walking Dead came out and the zombie stuff is... I mean, 10 years ago, every other movie was zombie related. And now, I think that's just gone. The zombie stuff is gone. I just really think this came too late.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe the ship has sailed. I don't know if Resident Evil will connect with the audience like it used to, because that was a big thing when we grew up. But now everyone who grew up with it is us, and I personally won't watch it. So it's kind of like who would it be aimed at? I don't know. It would have to be finding a new audience.
I'm not lining up for it, but I thought you were going to ask me the other question of what TV show would you like to see made into a movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because I wonder, I don't know if you've seen it, but have you seen The Many Saints of Newark, the Sopranos prequel?
Don't say anything. I still need to finish The Sopranos. So
I haven't seen it, but that's the prequel where James Gandolfini's son plays him.
Yeah.
In the 70s.
I want to watch that. Well, obviously, I can't watch it until after I watch the show.
Yeah. Well, that's a great example. But I tell you what, one, if there was a TV show that I'd like to be... turned into a movie. There's only one. Maybe it's because I'm watching it at the moment. That's what I'm thinking about. I'd like to see My Name Is Earl, simply because I want it to end. I want it to have an ending. I think the biggest problem with that is it got cancelled and it left you on the cliffhanger. I want there to be resolution. The other one I like is Penny Dreadful. That'd be another one.
Yeah. I think with My Name Is Earl, they'd have to write in a reason why Randy is now an absolute monster. Because I don't think he's gonna, you know,
make him wear a fat suit.
I don't think he's gonna method act his way back to that body type to play Randy again.
Do you know what? The great thing about My Name Is Earl is it'd be funny if they didn't.
Yeah.
Because that's the great thing about that show, is it's so silly that they could probably do that and kind of just like not even like make reference to it.
They probably could definitely get away with it, no doubt about it. But it would be interesting. What about Looper as a TV show?
No.
No?
The ending's pretty final. I know you're thinking like a new Looper, but
yeah.
I think that's so final. But I wouldn't be surprised if Knives Out goes down that road.
Nah.
Because that could easily be a TV show.
It could, but it's so good.
Yeah.
Knives Out 2 would be interesting to watch. I hope
but
it isn't.
I think they're like, there could be loads of Knives Out. If Knives Out 2's as good as the first one, then there'll be a sequel. I could just imagine, especially now it's gone on Netflix, I can imagine that going down the TV route.
What about Limitless? Did they make that into a TV show? They did.
They did.
And it was shocking. But I can see why they would
hard,
do that.
There's so many.
There is actually a lot.
That have been TV.
Oh, that would that actually
like
makes sense.
12 Monkeys is a TV show. Scream, they made a TV show of. Yeah,
it
the
was
Exorcist.
A, Scream one was okay because it made sense. That's the why they would
I
do that.
I never saw it, but
it was
I just,
okay. But not still not great. But it's not an amazing story, is it? So
it's a. I mean, I want to see the new one's got great reviews, so I do want to see it.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing that either.
But we're waffling on, I fear, and we need to
wrap
head back
up
to schedule and tell us what we're watching next week.
Well, it's funny you should mention Mike Lee's favorite movies, because this was actually it inspired me to pick the next movie. I thought. Because I read that this was in his top 10, and I was like, I wonder what else is in his top 10. So I had a look, and I'll be honest, that this guy's a proper film nerd, because these top 10s,
oh, yeah.
I was like, wow, I've seen one of these movies, and, well, now two. But we're going to make that three, because I picked his number 6 on the list, which looks like the one that would probably be out of the top 10, maybe the most easier one to review. A lot of the other ones look like proper... I don't know, like you could write an essay on them. You know, it could be like your dissertation could be on those movies.
I'm waiting for your essay on the death of Mr. Larevsky.
Yeah, it could be a dissertation though. But number 6 is Songs from the Second Floor. Now this one looks quite interesting. It's a Swedish black comedy drama film. And basically what it's about is, and this, I almost don't want to know what it's about. I want to go blind.
I already know what it's going to be about because, funny enough, I love the director's work. Roy Anderson.
Yeah.
One of my favorite movies he did was You, the Living. Absolutely incredible. And he's like the Swedish Wes Anderson. And the great thing about that movie is how everything's staged. Every actor is like a prop and they come in, it's like a static camera and they come in and they do their little like skits. They're like little vignettes, that one. I don't know if that's the same, but that was incredible. And the same with a pigeon sits on the verge of existence movie. Absolutely great as well. So I'm curious about this one.
Well, it's a good job you haven't seen it. I didn't know you're a big fan. He seems to be a director that crops up every now and then, doesn't he? So he does the two movies in the 70s and then didn't do another movie until 2000, which was this one. And then he's only done 3 movies since 2000. So in 21 years, he's only made 3 movies. So yeah, interesting director. But yeah, I'm not going to tell you what it's about. You can look at it up if you want. I want to go in blind. I don't know about you. But I would like to go in blind to this movie. But yeah.
What was it called again?
Songs from the Second Floor, and it's available on Amazon Prime to watch. Well, it says it is. I haven't actually verified whether it is, but it says it is. So we'll take that as gospel for now.
Okay. I was just seeing if it was on Mubi, because I know a lot of his stuff is on Mubi. But I don't see it on there.
Oh well, it'll be somewhere, but we'll watch that. We'll watch that. That will be our next movie. So yeah, we're gonna get through Mike Lee's. We're gonna get through Mike Lee's top 10 before the end of the year. I'm telling you.
Hey, I got no problem with that.
I trust him. If he recommended a film to me, I would 100% watch it and trust him on that. Just seems like he knows what he's doing.
Why would he lie to us?
Exactly. He's
everyone else, I can understand, but why us?
He's a legend. He's slowly becoming one of my favorite directors, which is kind of crazy. But yeah. Yeah. All right, so that's the next one we watch.
Perfect.
Brilliant. Right. Take it easy, guys, and we will see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.